Since 1953, the organization STEM Forward has named an Engineer of the Year for the seven-county Milwaukee area.
Brooke Mayer, a civil construction and environmental engineering professor at Marquette University, will receive the award next month.
Mayer has been honored in part because of her work with the In Defense of Water project. The project just received a third grant for the Department of Defense for $4.2 million.
The project aims to develop sustainable technologies to protect human health and the environment, treat sewage, and provide clean drinking water. That includes trying to address pollution from PFAS, lead, and phosphorus. Brooke, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks so much, Kate. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Tell us about the In Defense of Water project and what you're trying to achieve through it.
Yeah, it's a really neat interdisciplinary project that we have at Marquette University. We've been funded for a couple phases of it through the Department of Defense, but its aim is all about thinking about strategies and technologies and ways to enhance our water resiliency. And that's for dual purposes. So thinking about it from the standpoint of Department of Defense, so making sure that there's sufficient clean supplies, but also that same approaches and technologies that we use apply to water across the state of Wisconsin. And so we're using that to help out different citizens and localities in Wisconsin as well.
It strikes me, though, interdisciplinary, that there are so many aspects to water research, so many specialties, and so many people who have expertise in perhaps new technologies. How do you know what to prioritize?
It's a great question, and totally agree. There's so many different things that we work on under this same project that touch on all sorts of technologies, but also approaches and interactions and strategies and policies. And I think that all of those things have to work together to be able to have a sustainable, resilient supply of water. But one of the strengths of this effort is that we're able to integrate across all those systems. So we have people working down at the, you know, very small levels of molecular engineering and biology, all the way up to large scale, thinking about, you know, how regulations and different types of environmental drivers would spur on different types of policies related to water. And particularly thinking about how that might relate to other things like energy systems as well.
You don't know exactly how different aspects of this research might overlap in ways you just not might realize until you really get down into the granular level of what might be on the table.
Again, I think one of the big values of being able to have an effort that's kind of this large that can bring together people with extraordinarily different perspectives and skill sets, and all of a sudden you'll be talking to somebody and say, hey, even though we hadn't thought of it before, my skill in this area overlaps with your skill in that area, and we can approach a problem from a completely different angle. So that's been really fun to see how things have evolved over time.
Brooke, there's a new phase of this project that will further develop sensors that can alert people when water has been polluted. Can you describe a bit how this will work?
Yeah, the sensor thrust is a new one in this last phase of the Defense of Water funding that we have. And it's really targeting, like you said, being able to detect and to quantify different sorts of water contaminants that might occur. So as we look at regulations evolving in the U.S. with especially things like PFAS, being able to detect concentrations of these compounds at extraordinarily low levels has been challenging in the past, but a lot of the development in sensors allow us to look at levels that are kind of equivalent to like having a drop of a contaminant in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So very, very tiny. And so we do need new technologies that can sense those, see if they're there or not, but also moving towards, can they quantify them reliably so we know if we're in regulations or we have to take some sort of action to make sure that water's safe for human consumption.
The PFAS problem, it is so vast, over 12,000 substances. What progress can be made on treating PFAS in drinking water?
Like you said, it occurs in so many different flavors and so many different products that I think there's a lot of work at the head of that in thinking about replacement chemicals that can do the same targets, but do it with a less harmful route. And so I think that's, number one, something that we have to be looking at and that companies are. But two, if it's already out there, you know, this is referred to as forever chemicals. So they don't like to break down. They just like to hang around in water systems or, you know, bioaccumulate. And so I think it's extremely important to be able to detect, quantify, and then get rid of those compounds in water. There's a lot of people working on strategies that can target those so that they aren't forever. And so it's a really active research area. For example, some of the things that we've been working on are using electrochemical treatment processes and biodegradation. And we see a lot of promise in being able to, one, physically separate those compounds, so take them out of water, or two, to be able to actually chemically break them down. And so looking at full breakdown paths that make them not harmful to humans.
We're talking about the Defense of Water Project with Brooke Mayer, who is a Marquette University engineering professor named Engineer of the Year by STEM Forward. Brooke, the project is also exploring water reuse systems. What can you tell us there?
Water reuse is something that is increasingly catching on around the world, but it's an interesting topic because there's the extremes where people think about water reuse as, you know, kind of a hooking a pipe to a toilet. That's not exactly what it is, but the terminology of toilet to tap kind of gave a bad ring to it in a lot of cases. But we look at processes where you can really treat wastewater that's coming from drains or for toilets or things like that, but you treat it to such high standards that it's equivalent to drinking water standards. And so we do this as kind of a direct process versus, I'd say, pretty much all of the water in all of the world is reused to some extent because it's just a cycle. So whether it goes from our human systems out into Lake Michigan and then back into human systems, it's all part of reuse. We just look at advanced processes to accelerate it so that we have a ready supply of water when you need it.
Isn't there that some saying about dinosaur pee that we're,
Absolutely. Dinosaur pee, Einstein, all of those things, I truly believe it's come back around again.
And you know, so many communities around the country are dealing with severe drought conditions. Cities using this ability to treat and reuse water to varying degrees. What do you see as the potential for that here in Wisconsin?
If we think about here in Wisconsin, we're obviously a state that's just tremendously blessed with amazing water resources. And so a lot of times I think people might not have water reuse at the top of their minds. But I would argue that it's our responsibility to be good stewards of those resources. And it's interesting how many places, even in our water-rich state, we don't have ready, easy access to. And so one of the things that we're actually working on in our In Defense of Water project is thinking about where water reuse strategies come into play in Wisconsin versus Arizona, for example. And some of the different drivers that are going to be at play there. And that relates both to, you know, personal consumption, but also industrial use. So if you think about energy or even high-tech manufacturing, there's a lot of water that's used, but it can be cleaned up and reused on site to reduce the amount of, quote unquote, new resources that we're pulling from.
I want to turn our attention to phosphorus for a moment. You're involved in another project, Science and Technologies for Phosphorus Sustainability, looking to reduce mining of phosphorus, recycling it from wastewater. Can you talk about the problems, the way that we're using phosphorus now?
Phosphorus is, I think, something that's not on a lot of people's minds up front, but it's an incredible element where we actually mine it out of the ground to use it as fertilizer. And so all global food supplies rely on being able to access sustainable supplies of fertilizer and be able to actually use it. When we do, we apply it onto fields, and then some of that runs off in fields and isn't used by the plants. And that downstream phosphorus that's released, if it's too high of levels into the environment, creates these negative environmental conditions where we see things like algae blooms that happen essentially every summer here in Wisconsin and across the United Nations or United States. But these algae blooms can be so bad in a couple of cases that they might actually draw out the oxygen essentially and suffocate organisms that are in the water. So you could have dead zones like in the Gulf of Mexico, or they could produce toxins, and those toxins can be harmful for animals and for people. So on one hand, we try to remove phosphorus from wastes before they go into the environment to prevent that degradation. But on the other hand, these supplies of phosphorus that we mine, they're finite. So phosphorus regenerates on, you know, thousands year scale. So it's essentially a non-renewable resource, just like you'd think of fossil fuels. The big challenge there is that it's not replaceable or substitutable. So whereas with fossil fuels, we might be thinking of clean energy technology, phosphorus is the only thing that can be used to sustain cells, to grow food. And so we do a lot of focus on, can we get that waste on one hand, and then on the second hand, bring that together and put it back in a reusable resource that can be used to support food development.
Brooke, congratulations on this award, and thanks for sharing your research with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Brooke Mayer will be honored on February 6th as Engineer of the Year by STEM Forward. That's a Milwaukee nonprofit focused on STEM education and research. Mayer is a professor of civil construction and environmental engineering at Marquette University and one of the lead researchers on the federally funded In Defense of Water project.
It's Girl Scout cookie season. Yesterday, we asked you to share your favorite flavors.
Valerie writes, my absolute favorite Girl Scout cookie is the shortbread. Simple as it is, there's nothing better with a hot cup of coffee in the morning. I often dip them in my coffee before eating them.
And we asked for your experiences selling Girl Scout cookies. Rose writes, I sold Girl Scout cookies back in the mid to late 1960s for 50 cents a box.
Wow.
Got a time travel. And walked all over my small community by myself and collected the money. Never a care in the world.
Rob, I know you look forward to this time of year. Have you made your order yet?
Well, I have a connection in our newsroom, parent of a Girl Scout. Word on the street is they have plans to set aside my usual order for me. Won't say how many boxes or how long they're going to last.
You can keep sharing your favorite Girl Scout cookie flavors or your memories of selling them. Email us at wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at wpr.org/WisconsinToday. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.